powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Breaking about an hour ago, UW has suspended head coach Jimmy Lake for one game following an interaction with a student athlete on the sideline, so he'll be missing the Arizona State game. Defensive coordinator will be the head coach in his place. And you also have John Canzano, who has a tweet talking about kind of what he's hearing, obviously, of the Oregonian. He says, "I am told by a UW source that the decision to suspend Jimmy Lake was made by Sunday morning, Sunday a.m. University waited until today to announce it. He will not be paid for the week."
Yeah, this was everything that I heard yesterday morning that I tweeted out there. And so this is something that when you look at the situation that ended up happening, the announcement with John Donovan, it was surprising to me because it was told to me that this suspension, firing, all of it was on the table, but that it was more looking like it going to be a suspension for Jimmy Lake, that they wouldn't have announced that yesterday when they were already going to make a press release. So they wait till today, they kind of draw out the news. And this just seems like such an odd, unique situation for UW. And like I said before, it does not seem like this is a suspension and that they're going to move forward and move on with Jimmy Lake as their head coach, you know, into next year. This seems like a suspension that is going to lead into something more in regarding, you know, Jimmy Lake and his future here in as the Washington head football coach. So it just seems to me a very unique, drawn out process. But hey, you're looking at it and maybe you're saying, hey, we're just trying to get by in the last three games of this season, and this is the approach that we're going to choose.
Bob Gregory, UW acting head coach. I was reading a lot of updates, and you know when you just blank on something and you're mm-hmm. like, what is happening to my brain? And I just moved on. I was like, yep, defensive coordinator. You guys know where I'm getting. You guys are picking up what I'm putting down. By the way, I didn't mention it earlier, but because that news was Sunday morning and we had all seen, as a reminder, Junior Adams is the interim OC for this upcoming game. Actually, for the rest of the season, in that case. All right. So again, this is a story that we'll be tracking all day as there are continuing updates. But I'm going to guess that this is kind of the last big update we have for today. So let's get to the big Seahawks story, which right now, obviously, Russell Wilson's coming back. And then there's another story that has nothing to do with the Seahawks right now, but could very soon. And that's that the Browns are expected to waive Odell Beckham Jr. So if they waive him, it likely won't process until about 1 p.m. today, which is the league office deadline on the East Coast. That means that he'll be available tomorrow on waivers. The Seahawks are ninth on the waiver wire, and they are one of two teams in the top 10 with the cap space to be able to sign him onto his current deal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they will? And maybe more importantly, because we already looked at that question, will he make this team a playoff team?
Well, I do. And the reason why I say that is not to say that this is the most important need for the Seattle Seahawks, but this is the last opportunity that you have to legitimately add talent to your team, right? This isn't somebody off the scrap heap that you're trying to, you know, bring in here that you could maybe make a marginal difference to your pass rush or to your defense or to your offensive line or anything. This is a legitimate star talent. And you can look at his production. I would look at injuries. I would look at the bad relationship that clearly he had between him and Baker Mayfield as more of the reason why he didn't produce the way that we've been accustomed to seeing OBJ produce. And in his first year in Cleveland, he had over 1,000 yards. So this is a player that still, when you watch him on the field, you watch what he does, the way he can catch, the way he can run routes. I mean, this is a very productive player that can absolutely add to this offense. Last year, you went down the similar road, one with Josh Gordon, another time with Antonio Brown that you didn't bring here, and now you have Odell Beckham Jr. So is this the perfect position that you could look at? No. To the naked eye, there's other additions that you could make, but I would also say that who's your third target right now?
Freddie Swain, technically.
Who are you throwing the football at a high level? Who is adding to with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett? You could point to, hey, Will Disley, Gerald Everett. I'm with you, but they're not for whatever reason, the ball is not finding them.
Mm-hmm.
So can it find Odell Beckham Jr. better than it has anybody else on the Seahawks roster? I believe so. And it can help with DK Metcalf. It can help with Tyler Lockett. It can help with Russell Wilson. And this is the last chance to add to this roster this season for the last 9 games to make a run. And why would you not want to add that star talent to this roster for 9 games is beyond me. I think this is a slam dunk situation. If this was tied into his 3-year, 4-year contract, which is what it originally looked like, then there's a discussion of hesitation there, because I don't think you want to commit to OBJ past this year. You want to see what these 9 games look like before you even walk down that road. But this is a 1-year deal, cut and dry.
If the Seahawks, you and I both agree that there are other positions that the Seahawks would more immediately and obviously benefit from adding. Like if there was an offensive lineman slipping through waiver wires who was really good, defensive lineman, especially an edge rusher, like, yeah, that I would much rather see Seattle pick up one of those guys than a wide receiver. But that's not happening right now, and I don't anticipate that happening. So you are looking at ways to better your team, and I completely understand the intrigue with Odell Beckham Jr. Here's my question, though, Jake. If a great offensive lineman were falling through the waiver wire, I think the Seahawks could pick him up and immediately become a better team. I think that picking up Odell Beckham Jr. almost requires a step 2, which is opening up your offense a little more.
Yeah.
Like picking up Odell Beckham Jr., just adding him, I don't think that makes you a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are other, there's a step 2, step 3 you have to do.
I would fully agree with that. And so now that comes into conflict, and that's why, you know, when we had this conversation last week, I brought it up from Pete Carroll's perspective, or Pete Carroll, maybe not his perspective, but his philosophy, quote unquote. It doesn't jive with the philosophy. But guess what? You have to come to terms with the idea that Chris Carson might not be coming back. I mean, look at it. We just had an update in terms of guys coming off of the IR, and this doesn't mean that Chris Carson it won't come back this week potentially, but you look at John Boyle. He put out 3 players, Seahawk players, have been designated for return to practice this week. Russell Wilson, D. Eskridge, and Nigel Warrior. There's no Chris Carson. So if you're going into another week with Chris Carson being out, what do you have to rely on? Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett in the passing game. I'm sorry, but relying on Alex Collins and Rashad Penny and DJ Dallas and Travis Homer, no disrespect to them, but that isn't going to be your bread and butter. That isn't something that's going to win you games. You need to find a way to make the run game a balancing aspect that can be effective, that can be something that you go to and feel good about. You have to have the run game a part of this offensive system. No questions asked. But who are you going to be relying on to get you there in these final 9 games? It's going to be the passing game. It's going to be Russell Wilson. And Odell Beckham Jr. can absolutely help with that passing game.
Yeah, you've got to make it harder for defenses to either decide to stack the box or to blitz you constantly, right? Because they feel like there's so many deep options that they've got to send extra defenders.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would you rather at this point right now, because Odell, if you claim him, let's not even get to the point where
okay,
it could
so
be
let's
free
say
agent.
Seattle claims
let's
him.
Say you claim him. They have the choice to you either claim Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
or you save the cap money that you have for this year and roll it into 2022. What would you rather do? Because this, to me, is where the crux of the whole argument is. It's not whether or not there's other positional needs. That ship is gone. There's no one else that you're adding. It's Odell Beckham Jr. or nobody else. So do you want to save your cap money for 2022, or would you want to have the Seahawks go and snag Odell Beckham Jr. to help you try to finish strong the last
9
games?
I have my answer ready. Claim him and spend the money now.
Why?
Because I don't think this team is guaranteed to have some of the bigger name players on this roster. I don't personally think Russell Wilson is guaranteed to be on this roster next year, and he takes up 20% of your cap. I don't know that you're guaranteed to have higher paid players that are on this team right now. Dwayne Brown, he takes up a good portion of your cap. Is he going to be here next year? I don't know. Like, I think you're going to get some cap space opening up from stars that on paper are going to be here next year, but may not. I also think that, like, you're not going to spend it. Like, you're not. I would love to see, like I said, this team pick up a defensive end, a defensive tackle, an offensive lineman, a center. Where's that guy right now?
Yeah.
Where is he?
I mean, you're more likely to use that money to extend Quandre Diggs than you are to go and snag somebody new to add to your defense or to this defensive line. What we have seen the history of this team over the last, 4 years is that they are going to use that money to try and sign multiple offensive linemen instead of go after Jack Conklin. We're going to watch them go after and try to sign multiple defensive ends rather than go after and sign a prominent guy who can produce at a high level. We've seen that approach, and that's why, to me, I don't think that rolling this money over, which, by the way, they still, if they claim OBJ, they would have, so they would have, I believe, $5 million still left in the cap, somewhere in there. So that is rolling over. I think that that's still a positive, but when it comes to this year and the always compete mentality, to me, I don't know if you can claim that anymore.
Oh, I think you can absolutely. If you don't claim Odell Beckham Jr., it's not because you're not ready to compete. I don't read it that way.
Why not?
Because I would see it as them saying he doesn't fit our offense. He will not, because it's exactly the question I asked
you.
I don't think Odell Beckham. I don't think I would not.
Rashad Penny. That's why he doesn't. That's why he doesn't.
No, I would rather change my offense to try to take advantage of weapons I already have on my roster, like Gerald Everett, who I already paid $8 million for, and Will Disley, who I drafted to bring into this team and has already made good contributions in prior years, and you haven't been finding this year. You have weapons on your offense right now to be a better offense than you've been on paper, and you aren't taking advantage of them. I don't think not taking Odell Beckham Jr. means that you aren't competing, but I think that taking Odell Beckham Jr. at least gives you a chance to make your pass game in particular a little more elite than it is now. And if there is one commonality with
teams that get, Jake,
there's that second step. There's the second step. Are you going to change your offense?
You should.
Or are you going to ask Odell Beckham Jr. to come in here and get 2 targets a game so that everyone on Twitter can complain, hey, it's the third quarter, Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't have a target yet?
Exactly. I think that you should be looking at that and saying, all right, this is where we're at this point of the season. We should be adding a star talent like this. And by the way, Tampa Bay, they didn't have any problem adding Antonio Brown to guys that they already had a bevy of guys who were talented. Tampa Bay didn't look at their situation and said, oh, well, we've already got Rob Gronkowski. We've already got Cameron Brake.
Did adding Antonio Brown make Tampa Bay a Super Bowl team?
Sorry. No, we've got Leonard Fournette, and we've got Ronald Jones, and you know what? We're good on talent.
Did adding Antonio Brown alone make Tampa a Super Bowl team?
So therefore, we're going to back off of it. No, they said, hey, here's another talented guy, another weapon that we can add, and we're going to go ahead and do it. And guess what? That guy actually ended up producing at a high level in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you know what else they did? So, they took advantage of other weapons that they had instead of looking to one random guy that had like a questionable background. I'm not comparing Odell. You and I agree on the crux of the argument, which is the offense needs to be better, and there are things they can do to get better. And we both agree that that means exploring the passing game.
So what you're saying, though, is that if you claim the player, you believe that he is going to be wasted by the philosophy. Doesn't that go to and point to a bigger problem to begin with?
Hang on, I'm trying to find a way to win this argument still. I think
it flies in the face of everything. So when you look at this situation, again, if you don't have Chris Carson, you don't have a stable enough running back situation to say, hey, we are going to be a run-first oriented team. You need to be balanced. You need to have the run game there. That, to me, I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing for Russell Wilson to throw it 40, 45 times a game. But what I am saying is you do need to lean into your passing game. You need to lean into your star quarterback over the last 9 games. And the best way that you can try to win games and produce and be successful offensively is, yes, to add an Odell Beckham Jr. to this already talented group that you have, and to use your offense and what you're capable of in the passing game to get you there.
Yeah.
That, to me, is ultimately, if you get into the playoffs, it's going to be because Russell Wilson and this passing offense are really taking off, not because the run game is so unbelievably
good. That's the way that I want to look at it, because claiming Odell Beckham Jr. off of waivers certainly sends a statement publicly. Like, I guarantee you national talking heads will be like, Seahawks trying to be competitive. Look at them. They're trying to be a Super Bowl team, compete with the Rams, blah, blah, blah. That's the conversation. I think that evolving your offense, pushing your offense to be better, putting that pressure on Waldron, on Wilson, on all of these guys to say, look, we've got all these weapons. Let's finally do this. And that also means adjusting your philosophy and your scheme a little bit. It means either it's letting go of the reins or leaning into the good weapons you have. That actually makes you competitive. Like, that says a lot more. So, again, it's a fascinating conversation. I know we have to get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrite.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one. Boy, where do we even start? Let's start with Russell Wilson. Okay. He indicated he'll return this week with a hype video on Twitter. What's the real headline?
Real headline. Now, this isn't as relevant now, but the star quarterback of your team, the biggest sports celebrity in Seattle, is coming back from injury, and it was a footnote in sports radio for the first 20 minutes of our show because of all the chaos that's happening in Washington, Jake.
Yes, there is a lot of chaos. There's a lot of issues. Jimmy Lake being suspended one game, but I mean, you look at Russell Wilson coming back. Also, the fact that Aaron Rodgers and his vaccination status, non-vaccination status, that was a huge topic of conversation over the weekend. There's just a lot going on. OBJ, is he going to be here in Seattle, which, you know, you and I just had a fantastic debate on. And really, I see both sides of the conversation.
Yeah, same.
But I think that all of this, don't forget the fact that Russell Wilson is coming back against Green Bay, and for you to have even a chance at winning in Lambeau Field, you needed three to be back, and guess what? He is in record-setting time with the timeline of this injury, and the guy is just, he's incredible to me in terms of his work ethic, his preparation, his belief in himself, and that to me is what stands out about above so many other quarterbacks in this league. And truly what makes Russell Wilson special.
Can I tack on a second headline and then we'll be really quick with the next two, Curtis, which is that Chris Carson was not one of the three Seahawks who were designated to return from the injured reserve list, in which case the real headline is it is not looking like Chris Carson is going to play against Green Bay. He wanted to practice this week. That's what Pete Carroll said last Monday. Mm-hmm. That the plan was for Carson. Carson's plan was to return to practice. He said Carson would have to be cleared by team doctors Monday. Now, either that didn't happen, like he wasn't cleared, or they are still going to meet with him and do some additional tests and work with him a little bit. Like, one of those two things are true.
Yeah, and it doesn't, and here's the thing. Him not being back isn't necessarily the one, the today, it, he's out. You're going to be looking at Wednesday as the defining marker, right? But I will say and agree with you that this is not a good sign. After being on IR for 3 weeks and coming off of a bye, and Chris Carson, this first opportunity to be taken off of IR, you would have wanted him to be on this list. And the fact that he isn't is bad news. And like I said weeks ago, that this injury to Chris Carson is significant. It's not something that people have control over. And that's what makes this so difficult. It is very unpredictable. And this is something that I think is going to be a lingering issue, like Pete Carroll said earlier in the season. And a lot of people didn't believe him. But this is a lingering issue that will be a part of the topic of conversation all season long.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, the situation at UW evolving throughout the morning. We hear that Jimmy Lake has been suspended for this Saturday's game against ASU. On top of that, they have fired offensive coordinator John Donovan. We found that out yesterday following the latest awful performance from the Huskies offense. What is the real headline?
Rather than ban John Donovan from riding the bus back after horrendous offensive performance, Lake thought it would be better to just throw him under it. Now, again,
always got to have a fall game.
Once again, it's mostly to create kind of like a biting commentary on the situation. Although I think that for one, I do wonder if Jimmy Lake was kind of pressured to make a move there, given how horrendous the offense has been. And two, like, it was really bad. Jimmy Lake had a complete a reason to make that decision.
Mm-hmm. He does. He absolutely does. But I don't think this is Jimmy Lake's decision.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy Lake has defended him all the way through the season. Just now after Oregon, you're going to fire him? Just now when you have 3 weeks left to go? This is a microcosm. John Donovan is a microcosm of all the dysfunction that's currently going on at UW right now. I mean, it's, I don't even know where to begin with this. I mean, it's really frustrating and sad to see the University of Washington be in this state. And quite frankly, for Jimmy Lake to be in this state, because I believe that he is so much more talented as a coach than what we have witnessed here. And a big part of it is the offensive philosophy that he chose and the hiring of John Donovan himself. The moment that they hired him, you two know this. the moment they hired John Donovan, I told you guys that I thought this was the worst decision that, Jimmy Lake made. I thought that this was going to be a decision that they greatly regret and a missed opportunity by UW to continue the attraction that Washington had to recruits on the West Coast and across the country. UW, when Jimmy Lake took over, was still a very respected program. And right now, they along with a lot of the schools in the Pac-12, are in a very, very tough spot.
I would say even heading into the season, the expectations were higher given the weapons, receiving weapons they still had. And it just hasn't worked out. Curtis, did you want to?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that it's great as an Arizona fan,
there we go.
That we're not that was... the biggest dumpster fire in the conference right now.
Congratulations, Curtis.
That's great.
On that win, scoreboard.
Yeah, how hard
did
is it to win in the Pac-12, you guys?
Yeah, did you get into double digits there?
Yeah, we got 10 points.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Love that for you. I'm going to go ahead and skip that third headline. We went over Carson, which I thought was a bigger story heading out of this one. It was a wild week 9 in the NFL. Basically, everything we thought about the NFL. All the good teams looked pretty bad. We know nothing anymore. Let's go over everything we learned next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's jump into some NFL headlines. We'll start with this one. The Rams offense was demolished by a tough Titans defensive line. Who could have seen that one coming? Tennessee picked off Stafford twice, including one that was returned for a score, another that obviously led to a score. It was a pretty abysmal game for the Rams, who looked very average, put up just 16 points against, again, a great Tennessee Titans defense. This is not the narrative. This is not the story I thought I would be saying about either of these teams, not just because the Rams have been a great offense, one of the better offenses in the league, but because Tennessee struggled so much defensively last year and had just lost Derrick Henry for the season. You were wondering how they would fare. Well, turns out they beat a team that was 7-1. The Rams now fall to 7-2.
Yeah, and a big difference in that game was the amount of pressure that they were able to get on Matthew Stafford. And you look at the difference maker in that game, the guy who really controlled the game, it was a defensive tackle. I mean, you look at Jeffrey Simmons, he was an absolute monster. He had 3 sacks in the game, 3 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits. I mean, this guy was an absolute beast in regards to their pass rush, and that to me was really the difference in this game. And then you look at it from the fact that Matthew Stafford, 2 huge critical errors in interceptions that led directly to points. I mean, you take that out of the equation, and this game is a little bit different in my opinion. It's not like Ryan Tannehill had an incredible game. It's not like the Titans offense played amazingly well. It was them capitalizing on 2 really, really big Matthew Stafford mistakes and making Matthew Stafford extremely uncomfortable pretty much all game long.
Titans over Rams 28-16 was one of many upsets from the weekend. There was also the Cleveland Browns beating the Cincinnati Bengals. I know the Browns are still a playoff favorite, but the Bengals have been one of the best teams in the AFC. Cleveland defeats them 41-16. Meanwhile, Denver puts up 30 and Dallas puts up just 16. Dallas has been the best offense in the NFL, both in the run game and the pass game. They have seemed unstoppable, but they were this past weekend by the Broncos. So Denver beats Dallas. Cleveland beats Cincinnati. One last upset here, which might have been the biggest from the weekend for me. Jacksonville beating the Buffalo Bills 9-6. Gross. Great defensive game, though, by both teams.
I mean, what?
What's the biggest upset to you? Jacksonville over the Bills combined with the score being 9-6 is the biggest upset.
Yes, I believe so. I mean, especially after you watch the Seahawks just absolutely obliterate them. And to see Josh Allen and the Bills, who have been playing extremely good football, get smoked defensively by Jacksonville, I mean, it was unbelievable. But it also goes to confirm that my eyes were not completely wrong as I was evaluating the tape heading into the Seahawks game. And one of the reasons I was nervous is you saw this defense play good football. Mm-hmm. They played hard. And for whatever reason, they came in with a horrific game plan and did not play well against the Seattle Seahawks. But they came ready to play against the Buffalo Bills and against Josh Allen. And so when you look at the Buffalo Bills, they're 5-3. Everything is okay and fine. But also, they were the team to beat. You look at the team that was going to run away with it in terms of Super Bowl chances in the AFC. Everybody, a couple weeks ago, were talking about the Buffalo Bills. It just goes to show that it's a long, long season and things can change in a hurry. But the Buffalo Bills now losing two games here over the last 3 weeks to the Titans and now the Jags, you start to have to wonder what's going on with them.
The Raiders cut their second of their two first-round picks from 2020. They parted ways with former Ohio State cornerback Damon Arnette today. The final straw was a video that surfaced of Arnette. He was making death threats, holding firearms, but it seems that there were plenty of problems leading up to that. From Ian Rappaport, quote, "There were troubling off-the-field signs everywhere for Raiders first-rounder Damon Arnette. For instance, in his first year in the NFL, which was last year, Arnette crashed four rental cars within roughly a month," source said. "Now, after a tumultuous weekend, including online threats, he's out."
I mean,
four rental cars in a month is
how do you
wild.
Do that?
Why are
how
you needing to rent four rental cars?
Let me also tell
because
you what.
Because you crashed them all.
Yes. Well, when you go back for even the third car, do you think the rental place is like, so Damon.
Or do you go to a different rental car place each time?
Probably.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean,
Alamo, Hertz.
The question is whether
Avis?
Or not you paid for that insurance, right? When you get the rental car. So
rental cars give me so much anxiety. Like, I have never driven so carefully in my life. I had a rental car when we had like that snow ice storm here. Was it last year or the year prior? And at one point I was trying to park and it just started sliding downhill. And I was like, I'm going to have to pay for this. I'm going to have to pay for this. And then it stopped in time. But
you always want to rent a car that's better than your own.
I can't imagine. Yeah. And then you get back in your own car, though, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Here we go with this
dumpster on wheels.
But, like, the thought of, like, wrecking four of them.
It's crazy.
Four of them in a month. Not even over the course of a year. In a month.
And the Raiders losing out on back-to-back first-round picks. I mean, my goodness.
From the same draft.
Yeah.
From the same 2020 draft. They had two first-rounders. They're both cut this week.
What a disaster. What an absolute disaster.
All right, we know that the Seahawks are facing the Green Bay Packers this weekend. The following weekend, they're going to be playing the Arizona Cardinals. Now, they have been one of the best offenses in the league, but they got some injury news for Chase Edmonds after the weekend. He has a high ankle sprain and is expected to miss multiple games, which likely includes that game against Seattle. So, in all likelihood, Arizona facing Seattle without their lead back. Although, still a big weekend from James Conner. Shout out to my fantasy team. Thank you very much.
I'm sure he appreciates the shout out, but yeah. My goodness.
James Conner, thanks so much,
Stacey. You look at Kyler Murray, MVP.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't take a hit to his MVP candidacy, but the team did just fine with Colt McCoy in there, and that's like the worst thing that you could see. I mean, that this is a team that is a very, very good all-around team that has everything going for them right now. Defensively, the run game has been super sharp. And it's not just having Kyler Murray out, but one of their other star players in Chase Edmonds, who has been an absolute beast for them in the running game, in the passing game. He gets hurt the very first play. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even matter. Doesn't even slow them down. Doesn't even phase them in terms of their production. And what they were able to get, they were still able to run for 163 yards on the ground.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Let me get back to the last story of the day, which brings us back to Seattle, where Russell Wilson has been cleared by his surgeon to return to play. He's been fully cleared after a nasty-looking finger injury. And while the Seahawks haven't confirmed this news or spoken about this news, because Pete Carroll hasn't spoken with reporters yet this week as they return from their bye, they did designate the quarterback to return from the injured reserve list. So he hasn't been activated yet, but that interim step of designating someone to return to practice has been done today.
And that's great news, right? That means that he is ahead of schedule, that he's not in question of whether he can throw the football or not. He's ready to go. He's ready to practice right now. And that is great news when it comes to the idea of, oh, is he going to be 100% healthy? He's 100% healthy at this point. Now the real question begins in terms of who are you going to be offensively? How does this offense work with Russell Wilson getting back into the lineup for the first time? Are they having to iron out any kinks? And this isn't an easy return. You're not going up against the Houston Texans or one of the worst defenses in the league. The next 2 weeks, you're going up against two very, very good football teams, two of the best teams in the NFC and two of the best defenses that you're going to face in Green Bay and Arizona. So a significant challenge awaits for Russell Wilson when he returns to the field.
All right, we're going to tell you everything you need to know about the Odell Beckham Jr. situation, including how much it would cost to add him to the Seahawks, where the Seahawks have a chance to add him on the waiver wire, etc. We're also going to talk about whether or not he makes the Seahawks a playoff team. And then coming up at 1 p.m., I want you guys to answer that question, so I'm throwing it to you. Does adding Odell Beckham Jr. make the Seahawks a playoff team? Does adding Odell Beckham Jr. make them a better team? In fact, a playoff team. So I want you to think about your answer. I'll give you that number to call in about 20 minutes. First, though, we're going to look at everything you need to know about the potential acquisition that's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Odell Beckham Jr. in games this year, starting with week one. 77 yards, 27, 20, 79, 23, 6. Obviously, only had one target in that, or one reception in that game. No touchdowns. Now we obviously know the talent that he has. We've seen him with the Giants. We've seen him at his best. He will reportedly be waived by the Browns today. And that means he's going through the waiver wire. Seahawks number 9, thanks to their less than stellar record, but also the highest they've been on the waiver wire in a while. Only one team ahead of them, the Jacksonville Jags, have enough cap space to claim Odell Beckham Jr. with his current salary, because you have to be able to take that on. The new team has to take on about $7.25 million, fully guaranteed. Brown's still on the hook for some of that cash. Again, Seahawks have about $12 million in space. One team ahead of them has enough to do that. Mm-hmm. The Detroit Lions, obviously on there as the first team, they've already said that they're not planning to claim him. So that takes at least one team out of the running. Now, Odell Beckham Jr. reportedly wants to go unclaimed. He wants to slip all the way through the waiver wire so that he can choose where he goes, and presumably chooses a team that has a great quarterback, a team that's a contender. Mike Florio saying one of his preferred teams is the Seahawks. So how do you play this game if you're Seattle? Do you claim him at number 9, pay him $7.25 million fully guaranteed, and bring him onto your team? Or do you let him hit free agency and hope that you can get him on a cheaper deal because he'll choose you?
I don't think you let it go to that risk, honestly. I don't. And you could look at it and say, yeah, well, we could get him on a cheaper deal. There's no guarantee of that. What if the 49ers, what if the Saints, what if the Ravens, what if any of those other teams look at OBJ and say, hey, we're not just willing to offer you a contract for this year. We're willing to offer you a multi-year deal now. So right away, it goes from this unique opportunity with Odell Beckham Jr. and saying, all right, we have an opportunity here in the last 9 games of the season to add Odell and see how it goes for the last nine games, knowing that Chris Carson, his availability is in serious question. Even if he does come back, can he remain healthy? And so the status of your run game is in serious question. But here's an opportunity for us to boost our passing game and boost our passing offense with already the talented players that we have. And now we can go make a serious run at this thing. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you let it go to risk unless you're more concerned about the cap space that you can roll over heading into 2022 than you are about this year.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that could certainly be something they're looking at, because John Schneider has made it clear on multiple occasions that they don't like sacrificing the future just to try to win now, that they want to make sure they're a healthy club in the short and long term. You and I were kind of debating earlier, and someone texted in, you know, hey, you can add Odell Beckham Jr. and still take advantage of your weapons. And I want to make an important distinction about the debate that we were having, because I think it's a really fascinating one. Jake and I both said, if I were the Seahawks, I'd claim Odell Beckham Jr. on waivers. I would take him on waivers and just go all in now. The question that makes it interesting is, A, does adding Odell Beckham Jr. make you a playoff team? And B, what does not claiming him say about your team?
I mean, to me, as I've already said, I don't think that you can have your always compete motto. Always compete motto to me meant in every single aspect, in every opportunity that you had to realistically upgrade your team, like this situation, for any given year, you jump and you take advantage of that opportunity. And this, to me, is one that's clear-cut, that's right in front of you, and you have the opportunity to do so. Now, that doesn't mean, okay, if there's a team that claims OBJ in front of you, am I going to be upset at that? No, because the Seahawks didn't have the chance. But if they go in there and they don't claim Odell Beckham Jr. and they're not actively trying to make him a part of this roster, I don't think that that's always competing. I don't think that's taking advantage of a unique opportunity where you have a star-level talent out there to help your offense and to upgrade in any way that you can, and let it pass you on by. To me, that would be a difference in philosophy from what I have come to know of Pete Carroll and John Schneider and the rest of this group. It would just be very different. And so I really believe that when you're talking about that, you don't sign Odell. Now you're looking at, okay, we're saving our cap space and we're rolling it over into 2022. We find that more valuable to our franchise. That's fine. But again, like I said, that's what it'll signal to me. And I also believe that you're not adding anybody else to this roster. There's nobody else that's coming in for the pass rush. There's nobody else coming in any other position. And also, your quarterback in Russell Wilson has advocated for it, reportedly. He's advocated for Odell Beckham Jr. to be here in Seattle. And if you don't, you know, I'm not saying you have to listen to every word that he says, but this would be another time where you say, no, we don't think that that's the right move for us. And I would be curious as to how that would be taken by Russell Wilson as
well. I mean, I'm assuming that Russell Wilson would be annoyed by them not doing that if it's something he wants. I think any quarterback is going to see a wide receiver and say, I want that guy, add him, right? Not my money, add him. And then the team is going to say whether or not they do. I think that I do think the Seahawks aren't using all of their weapons effectively, and I don't think that's on Russell Wilson. Like, I think, you know, all these players can be better, including Russell Wilson when he was out there, but we've seen them not take advantage of the third receiving weapon that they have of their tight ends, and I don't know how you fix that, but it's you have weapons that are better than your performance would indicate to me on both sides of the ball. The most popular responses that I see are, number one, that Odell Beckham Jr. is a locker room cancer and you don't want to add him. And number two, can OBJ rush the passer? If not, you don't need him. What would you say to either of those?
Well, you're not going to get anybody that's going to rush the passer. So you wouldn't want any good player at all. Any star, talented, impact player, if they became available, unless they play defensive end, you're like, nah, I'm good. We're straight. Like, no. Are you kidding me? Any opportunity that you have to add someone of that caliber and realistically be able to do it, fit it under your cap, and by the way, as you said, there's not a legitimate third receiver option here. There's not legitimately anybody else that has stepped up and has taken on that role for this team. So it is somewhat of a need for your offense right now on third downs, in the red zone, and just in your offense in general. And yes, that would mean that you would have to make a little bit of a shift stylistically in terms of offense and what you want to do, but I think that should have been the case anyways.
Well, and I think it's something that Shane Waldron can be capable of doing. I mean, he was the passing game coordinator for the Rams when they had three explosive passing weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something he's capable of doing.
This is another thing that I saw that I've seen. Do you think OBJ would be okay being the third receiver?
I mean, I don't.
Well, it doesn't.
Honestly, no. But he's not in a position right now to complain about.
But hold on, let's not think of it that way. You don't think of these guys as in the pecking order of, I've got to get my throws to DK first, Tyler second, OBJ third, and then whoever else down the line. This is about having playmakers all over the field, and who balls out is who balls out that particular Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Tampa Bay. They don't have that issue. They don't have that concern heading into every single game. So one game, Mike Evans pops off and has an amazing game. The next game, it's Godwin. The next game, it's Rob Gronkowski. The next game, it's so-and-so. It's all dependent on the matchups and the way that the game goes. And so I think everybody understands that. And you're not forcing the ball to OBJ over DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett by any means, but also having another legitimate receiver out there that can make a difference for you, I don't think is a big issue at all.
I think that DeSean Jackson isn't really the best example of this, but for the most part, players don't complain as much if they're on a winning team.
Correct.
Like, if I am a player, I'm saying this is like a human behavior. I am much more lenient with things I would normally have an issue with if as a whole it's working.
And you can't have the same argument that OBJ has had about Russell Wilson that you've had about Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield, right? Like those arguments don't add up. They don't exist. Or Eli Manning at the end of his career, or whatever the case may be. Like this is a different situation, in my opinion. And again, this isn't signing up for 3 or 4 years of Odell Beckham Jr. This is 9 games, and hopefully more than that, because you make the playoffs and hopefully you're able to find a way to get hot and make a run at this thing. But it's 9 games.
All right, I want you guys to sound off. Does adding Odell Beckham Jr. make the Seahawks a playoff team? Would you add him? I want to know if you'd add him. 206-421-3776. Call right now. 206-421-3776. Your Seahawks GM right now for the next 20 minutes. I want to know whether or not you are adding Odell Beckham Jr. And importantly, more importantly, whether or not that makes the Seahawks a playoff team. That's coming up next.